Which reminds me, compare the similarities of these two stone sarcophagus between Egypt and Japan. I've shared this example across social media, and it is hotly debated, but if you want to know my opinion, I think that this is a profound example of an unknown cross-cultural connection between the continents. I mean, just look how similar they are.
Isn't it? I mean, just look at those. It's like the similarities are numerous, and it's weird. It's not like these are functional similarities. It's not like they needed to look this way in order to work as a coffin. These are just similarities that are seemingly aesthetic, right? And I couldn't really find anybody else that had dug into the connections. Jimmy's the only guy that I've really seen talk about it at all. And he didn't dig into it too terribly deeply. Nothing against Jim. He made the connection and pointed it out and walked away from it. And it's really interesting to me. And it's weird because here's the thing. 6,000 miles and 1,000 years separate these two coffins from each other. That is freaking weird, man, because these don't just look a little bit the same. They look really the same. And you wouldn't be surprised to find out, as I was doing my research for this video, I found two other coffins in Egypt from the same time as this one that had similar counterparts in Japan. Here, take a look. Now that, to me, and there's a lot to unpack here. So sit yourself down. Let's talk about this for a minute. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now, since Egypt is a place that most of my regular viewers are going to be pretty well versed in, I figure we'll start in Japan. Now, this is actually one of two coffins that are basically identical, and they're attributed to the Empress Suiko and her son, Prince Takeda. She died in 628 AD, making these about 1,400 years old. And these were not the only examples of this style of coffin in Japan. As a matter of fact, this is kind of the culmination of 400 years of work to make this kind of thing. These were used by numerous different noble people over the years, but they didn't all look quite the same. Looking into the origins of how these kinds of coffins came to be and how they evolved into that design could actually give us some ideas how they may be connected to Egypt. Now, students of Japanese history will no doubt have heard of the Jomon culture. They were the indigenous people of Japan before a migration from mainland Asia took place around the 3rd century AD. Over time, the Jomon people were integrated into the new population. There is no Jomon culture to speak of today. Now, their DNA does live on in the Japanese population of today. But the Jomon people, they actually didn't make this style of sarcophagus. That came with migrants from the mainland Asia, and it wasn't immediate. It was somewhere around 500 to 1300 years from the time the mainlanders started dominating the islands until the beginning of the style of burial that incorporated these sarcophagi. But when it did begin, the similarities to Egyptian mythology were immediately present. Now, in Japan, the earliest coffins we see of this style show up in what's known as the Kofun period. And that's not a historical period, that's an archaeological period for you history nerds out there. But the whole point of the Kofun period is it's named after Kofuns, which are these big-ass burial mounds that quite frequently are keyhole-shaped. And in the center of them, you would find a burial chamber, and there would be paintings on the walls and grave goods and pieces of iron and shit like that, and a body in a sarcophagus. And the sarcophagus was known as a tumulus, if I Google Translate's not killing me here too hard, and my pronunciation, as normal, is probably wrong. But anyway, these things were the type of coffin that we see slowly evolving into what Princess Suiko eventually had. And the first ones of these were not even stone. They were made of wood and bamboo. For example, one of the earliest of these mounds, known as Kurotsuka Kofun, has a clay enclosure for a wooden coffin. Not much of the coffin remains, and what it looked like exactly is a mystery that will probably never be solved. But one thing is interesting is that the manner that these were constructed in. The wooden coffins were built like the boats of the time were. They split the log and hollowed it out as they would a canoe, and this is a point to keep in mind as we go forward. Anyway, as the Kofun period progressed, wood and bamboo gave way to stone. And the stone sarcophagi leave us some actual clues that we can put our hands on, like this tumulus here from the Ebisuyama Kofun. It is not only made of stone, but it has protrusions on it. These are not the same as the ones that we started with that look similar to the Egyptian coffin, but still you can see the beginnings of the style here. and this is known as a boat-shaped sarcophagus, and the similarities are considered to be intentional. These sarcophagi were symbolic boats, and that's really driven home by the name for the nubs on these things. They were still called, in Japan, rope-hanging protrusions, because they were places they were going to hang like rigging or whatever from on a symbolic boat. These were intended to ferry the dead, not to the underworld, but through the underworld, on out to the other side. And depending on the region, it might have been to reincarnation or into some afterlife. It's tough to say, because at this period in Japan, Shinto was very dominant and Buddhism was moving in, and Shinto is already very splintered and very regional in what its beliefs are, and Buddhism was very drastically different in a lot of places the two were incorporated. So it's tough to say exactly what the original intentions are when you come out the other side. That's probably going to change on which village you live in. Now, the idea of a boat carrying the soul through the underworld is real rare than you think. I mean, yeah, we've all heard of Charon or Charon or however the fuck you pronounce that thing that, you know, ferries people through the river Styx so you can carry on my wayward son. And but that guy takes you to the underworld and drops your ass off. This isn't the same. This is going through the underworld. And this is something that you see a lot in Japanese culture today, even though a lot of the origins of a lot of their traditions are lost. For instance, the Toro Nagashi is a ceremony where candles are set on boats and sent off onto the water to honor the dead. Or consider the Gaza Okuribi ritual, a ceremony where five large symbolic fires are set that are all in the shape of different symbols. And one of those symbols is a boat. Now, little is known about the origins of that festival, but one thing is known is that it was part of the Obon festival, and that's a time when the deceased are supposed to come to Earth and mingle with the living and their ancestors and descendants and all this weird Shinto stuff that I don't really fully versed in, to be honest with you, but that's beyond the scope of the video. What matters is that they believed that this stuff had something to do with, you know, communicating with the deceased souls. They had gone through the underworld and they were accessible now, and a way to do this was through boats. So there's another culture that we're going to talk about that also believed that boats would take you through the underworld and on out to the other side. I'll give you three guesses what that culture is. Now, the next generation of sarcophagi, well, maybe not the next generation, but the next more common style, incorporated a ring on one or both ends of the lid, like in these pics here, from the Kunamanto tumulus and the Mochida Kofun cluster. Man. Now, this is more boat symbolism. You could, like, tow these boats through the water or use them to tow something else through the water. It's tough to say for sure. A lot of the symbolism, again, a lot of the exact symbology or however you want to say it has been lost to time, but it is still commonly known in Japan that these are copies of boats. There's nobody that questions that. Anything that I read about that refers to these as copies of boats. And it makes sense considering that's the way that they started out building the damn things was like that. And it makes sense considering where they live. However, again, with the Shinto thing and the Buddhism thing, it's hard to exactly parse things. And seeing where these things go eventually does give us an idea of where it might have come from. So let's look forward at more tumulesses. Tumulesi. More of them, they're coffin things in the ground, right? Whatever the plural of tumulus is. Like this tumulescence here. This is known as the Matsuyukama tumulus. The site it's located on is now fully Buddhist, but not long before the Buddhists took over the region, this tumulus was created inside the kofun as usual. Three sides of the stone box have those rope-hanging protrusions on both ends. Still roughly hewn from the stone, the form is apparent, but only in a basic sense. As time and resources allowed, better versions of this sort of tumulus were manufactured. Like this reproduction of the tumulus from Sudoshiroyomo Kofun, sorry for the perfect pronunciation, guys, it has fully taken on what is known as the Nagamochi-shaped tumulus form. The upper piece is all done far more ornately than before, but the bottom of the sarcophagus betraying the origins of its design. It still has the rougher boat shape incorporated into it, but all the other parts are fully decorated. Now, this is clearly a richer person's grave than most. The design continues to evolve after this, while not incorporating so many of the artistic embellishments. We see several that seem to slowly move towards a design we started the video looking at. For instance, this one, called the Inyarama Tomalis, I'll put the name on the screen, looks like a rougher version of the design we saw at the beginning used by Princess Suiko. It has almost all the same elements in the same locations. There are numerous examples of this style of sarcophagi scattered all throughout Japan. And while there is some mystery as to where this style began and what some of the symbolism means, there's a lot that we do know. We do know that they started with flat lids and eventually had a roof-shaped lid, like we see in the ones we started talking about at the beginning. We know that the protrusions on them are still known as rope-holding protrusions still all the way today, rope-hanging protrusions, still all the way today in Japan. We also know that today in Japan, they still recognize these as symbolic boats. Now, I've talked to you about the evolution that went into creating these things, and I've given you the abridged version. So how that to me says that the idea of these being developed independently is pretty wild, right? I mean, you would expect there was quite a bit of change that went through time in order for them to get to that design in Japan. So 1,000 years earlier than that in Egypt, how did they get there? Well, when I explain to you, I think you're going to find this so simple, you're going to be like, wow. We know the ancient Greeks and the ancient Chinese were in contact with each other quite a bit. As a matter of fact, the ancient Greeks even got into contact with the ancient Koreans, they say. And this was all happening right around the exact time that the Egyptians were making that coffin. Or coffins, I should say. As I showed you at the beginning, this is more than one coffin bore that style, although there wasn't a ton of them. I was only able to find three in my research. One of them is the tomb of Ta-Shepsis. The other is from the time of King Psamtik I, but is currently unknown as to whom it belonged to. Now, as these are a very peculiar style of sarcophagus for Egypt, it seems odd to me that they show up so late in the record. All are from the 26th dynasty, a time when the Greeks were in Egypt, but the Egyptians still had some power. And Greek coffins? They looked like fancily decorated boxes, not at all like the ones used by the late dynastic Egyptians, besides these. To me, it seems very likely this is just a mingling of Egyptian and Greek beliefs into a new style of sarcophagus. Instead of using the old Egyptian style like King Tut was in, or instead of using the plain Jane Greek one with just a bunch of embellishments, they use a box like the Greeks would use, but they incorporate some aspects of a boat, because the Egyptians believed in a solar bark that was a boat that would carry the deceased through the underworld. Not to the underworld, through the underworld. You come out the other side. So in that regards, we're looking at a very similar afterlife belief. So it makes sense to me that they would, you know, mingle these two beliefs together, and then they get this new technology for resurrecting the soul or bringing it into reincarnation or whatever beliefs they might have had, right? Point is, at this time, the Silk Road was a thing. Trade was hot and heavy. I mean, this is around the same time that they were minting coins in the five discs with Greek scripts, they're known as in China, that they found that they're like five Greek. There are five coins that were minted in China that have Greek writing on them, if I understand what I read correctly and remembering it right. But at any rate, there's Greek script in China. It don't matter if the Greeks dropped the coins off themselves, as long as the Anunnaki didn't do it. What I'm saying here is the same thing. The Greeks and the Chinese were in heavy contact. So the idea of this new afterlife concept spreading through the Silk Road and making its way over to Japan isn't entirely crazy. And like I showed you, the other ones that I showed you, they kind of look like predecessors. It almost looks like this was, like it came over wholesale and it just took them a long time to get to that point of making this nice, really fancy one like we see at the beginning of the video. But that's where things also are kind of interesting because, okay, you could say maybe that the Japanese already believed in a boat taking people into the afterlife, so they incorporated this belief when they got it from the Silk Road, or that you could say that it was very attractive to them because of how much the water is part of the Japanese way of life, so a boat being part of the afterlife just made sense to them. Either way, it seems to have shown up as part of their funerary process. But then they get fast forward in time to Princess Suiko. Now, Princess Suiko, She's an interesting person. This isn't a video about her, but we'll talk about her for 1 minute because she changed Japanese culture quite a bit. And one of the things she did was open up massive trade with the mainland of Asia. But the other thing she did was foster cultural exchange. And now, she was extremely powerful and extremely rich and very educated and very into other cultures. If she was of the opinion that these boats that you use to make you go into the afterlife, if she was the opinion that that was a thing, well, it only stands to reason that she would want to have the best version possible. And if she was aware that her people grabbed this knowledge from Egypt, no, it would have had to have been passed down for a while for people to have known that, but it is feasible that she would have known that. She was plenty powerful enough to send somebody to go find out what these things should have looked like exactly. Get me perfect ideas. Let me know everything about it. Bring me back some information. And even though the ancient Egyptians were kind of in a bad way by the time of Princess Suiko, and they probably didn't have many priests to instruct her, the boxes were still there. There was plenty of things that she could have found, and she may have well seen things that we don't see. At any rate, in my opinion, that makes a lot more sense. Some version of Princess Suiko reaching out and this thing already have traveling, basically the concept traveling on the Silk Road to Japan and then somebody going from Japan back to Egypt to fine-tune it much later makes more sense to me than this just cropping up in both places at random. That, to me, is absolutely insane. I mean, you see a lot of examples in Japan of ones that are very similar to this, but just less refined, less clean. The idea of them showing up in both places without some connection, the Greek script. Should we just assume that the Greek script showed up in both places without a connection, that the Chinese just, I mean, that's a little bit more complicated, but still, I mean, this is, you're getting to the point where this is uncanny, and there's no, okay, it's one thing to say, like I mentioned the functional things earlier. I'll hammer at that for a second because you always hear this. In evolution, they talk about convergent evolution. You know, a shark looks like a dolphin, looks like an ichthyosaur, which is like a dinosaur dolphin. And they all look like that because they do the same thing. They chase fish in the water and they're about the same size. So that's what does the optimal shape for that critter. Fine. But these are coffins, man. Were you testing how they ended up in the afterlife? Oh, this design gets people to heaven quicker than that other design. I don't think they had any way of figuring out that. So for these two things to end up looking identical or almost identical is, to me, just saying, well, you know, it's just coincidence. that to me is absurd. That to me is absurd. But that's just my personal opinion. What do I know? And on that note, I want to say thank you first to Jimmy for finding this connection to begin with, or at least publicizing it. And to all of you for watching this far, I really appreciate it. I hope you found this enjoyable. I know it's not as neat as saying, well, the first people that we were on the island, the Jomon people, they were the ones that brought this over, and the Egyptians were using this style all the way into prehistory, but that's not the reality of it. The reality of it is much, much, much later than any Atlantis bro would like to hear. However, I think it's still pretty freaking interesting, man, and it still flies in the face of mainstream history when they try to tell us things like there's no connection between these cultures. There was more than just a little connection between these cultures. There was cultural contact, cultural diffusion, and you can see it if you take the time to dig around and look. If you'd like to support the channel, there's buttons down below. You can be a channel member or join my Patreon, or I got a Ko-Fi link too. I guess you can join that as a member or just donate one-time thing. You can send me pictures of your grandma in her Sunday best. Thank you. And yeah, thanks a lot and have a good day. Oh, you can click that describe button, the describe button. It's free.